Hello and welcome to episode 38 of the Educating Investors Podcast. My name is Scott Peterson, Financial Advisor of Harmony Wealth Management. Thanks for tuning in for today's episode, Thinking About Tapering. I believe that educated investors equal successful investors. The goal of this podcast is to help to educate as many individuals as possible on markets, the economy, and financial planning topics. In this episode, I'm going to discuss the potential tapering by the Federal Reserve and what it may mean for markets. An ideal starting point would be to start with a definition of tapering of asset purchases. Tapering is the slowing of asset purchases and leading to a theoretical reversal of quantitative easing policies implemented by a central bank to stimulate economic growth after the QE has had its desired effect to stimulating and stabilizing the economy. At the April FOMC meeting, the Fed statement stated the Federal Reserve will continue to increase its holdings of Treasury securities by at least $80 billion per month and of agency mortgage-backed securities by at least $40 billion per month until substantial further progress has been made toward the committee's maximum employment and price stability goals. The question has always been, what does substantial progress mean? The Fed has not told us because it gives them more flexibility in terms of policy. We are starting to get some hints that some members believe that they are at least at the point of thinking about tapering asset purchases. The minutes that were released on May 19th of the April meeting stated a number of participants suggested that if the economy continued to make rapid progress toward the committee's goals, it might be appropriate at some point in the upcoming meetings to begin discussing a plan for adjusting the pace of asset purchases. And a parade of Fed members are following up on the statements made in the minutes with the following comments and headlines coming out over the last month. St. Louis Fed President Bullard said, U.S. may be getting close to the point where pandemic is over, then attention could turn to post-pandemic monetary policy. San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly, who during a CNBC interview said that the central bank was talking about tapering its bond buying program, but cautioned that policymakers were still being data-dependent and patient in their plans to normalize policy. Fed number two, Richard Clarida, said that the time to discuss scaling back the asset purchase program may be nearing. I think it's going to depend on the flow of data that we get. Lael Brainer said vulnerabilities associated with elevated risk appetites are rising. The combination of stretched valuation and very high levels of corporate indebtedness bears watching because of the potential to amplify the effects of repricing events. Robert Kaplan said the Fed should start talking about tapering bond buying soon, and I am beginning to feel differently regarding the advantages and drawback of the Fed's QE purchases. And Aaron Grogesgren, the mortgage market probably doesn't need as much support now. And finally, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said it may be that interest rates will have to rise somewhat to make sure our economy doesn't overheat. Why is this important? Because Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell stated that he would give plenty of notice before they started to taper asset purchases. This is to hopefully avoid sparking a repeat of the 2013-2014 taper tantrum. The 2013 taper tantrum just had its 8th anniversary. After then-Chairman Ben Bernanke uttered the comments during a congressional hearing that a reduction in purchases was ahead if the economy continued to improve, the benchmark 10-year Treasury yield spiked a full percentage point over the next 4 months, while the S&P 500 surrendered 5% before turning around and actually ending the year with a gain. Both the moves in stocks and bonds happened prior to the Fed actually reducing the rate of purchases at a pace of just $10 billion a month. The last time the Fed tried to reduce its asset holdings and raise rates, the results were not good. Statements from Powell that the balance sheet drawdown was on autopilot and the Fed was still a long way from stopping what had been in 2017 and 2018, a series of quarter-point rate hikes were met with revolt in the markets when economic growth slowed. That's why getting the communication part right is critical for Powell and the Fed. If the markets were to see any pickup in volatility, would be around the actual notice given by the Fed of the tapering of asset purchases, not the actual beginning of tapering itself. As this regime changes from easier to tighter monetary policy, one thing we do know is that the Federal Reserve would not be leading the charge as it comes to tapering. The Bank of Canada has already started to do so, becoming the first major central bank to cut back on pandemic-era money printing stimulus programs. The Bank of Canada's cut its weekly bond buying program last month highlights the next phase is about slowing hefty asset purchases. The Bank of England, due to their recovering economy, will slow bond buying to £3.4 billion a week from £4.4 billion currently, although Governor Andrew Bailey said the move did not amount to tapering because the Bank of England kept the total size of the bond buying program unchanged at £895 billion. The Norges Bank, the central bank in Norway, doesn't intervene in bond markets, so the taper debate is not applicable. It says it is on track to hike interest rates in the second half of 2021. Reasons why tapering and tightening of monetary policy is starting to take place is due to the fact that economies are recovering and central banks no longer need to support markets, and in fact is adding to financial instabilities and potentially bubbles by continuing to provide unneeded liquidity. In the most recent Fed Financial Stability Report, it stated that however valuations for some assets are elevated relative to historical norms, even when using measures that account for treasury yields. In this setting, asset prices may be vulnerable to significant declines should risk appetites fall. It's not just the Federal Reserve that is concerned. The European Central Bank said in its financial stability review, the euro area faces elevated risk to financial stability as it emerges from the pandemic with high debt burdens and remarkable exuberance in markets as bond yields rose. So the next question for the major central banks such as the Fed is, when is substantial progress made toward the committee's maximum employment and price stability goals, and when would that lead to the official notice that the Fed will begin tapering asset purchases? The fact that fellow Fed members have commented recently on the possibility of talking about tapering shows that they are already starting to give the market notice of the upcoming tapering. According to the latest Reuters poll of economists, the U.S. Federal Reserve could begin scaling back asset purchases in the first quarter of 2022. If that is the case, the Federal Reserve could give that official notice at any time. Much of this will depend on the economic data that comes in. The Fed's bar is substantial progress toward its mandate of full employment as well as price stability. With more than 8 million fewer people working now than before COVID-19 in January 2020, that hurdle remains. The Fed has been clear that it needs tangible evidence of improvement, not just forecasts. The Fed is no longer relying on forecasts to guide its policy decisions. Actual numbers and data have to be there for the Fed to shift its stance. This is, by definition, reactionary policy, making it not proactive. This would lead me to believe that the official notice could come in any of the upcoming Fed meetings starting in July. The June meeting would probably be too soon in terms of more economic data showing progress toward their goals, and they will be updating their economic projections at the June meetings. An obvious choice would be the Jackson Hole Policy Symposium in August. Last year at that event, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell laid out the Fed's new approach to inflation. Again, much of this will depend on the actual economic data and how it's progressing, but if the view is that they will start tapering toward the beginning of 2022, then notice will have to be given before that happens, according to the Fed. So what does tapering of asset purchases mean for the market and the economy? The best way to look at this would be to start on how they reacted in previous instances of asset purchase tapering. Let's revisit how yields behaved during prior episodes of QE and periods following QE, or quantitative easing. When looking at past instances of quantitative easing, the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note rose during each QE period and fell upon its conclusion. According to data from Real Investment Advice, 10-year yields tend to rise about 1% from the start of QE to the peak yields levels during QE. Equally important, yields tend to fall toward the end of QE. The reason for peaking before QE ends is growing investors' belief at those times the Fed was getting closer to tapering or halting quantitative easing purchases. Currently, yields are close to their cycle highs. If we believe the Fed is nearing tapering, yields could be peaking. Based on prior quantitative easing taper experience, a yield decline may be in store for the next 6 months to a year if the Fed is, in fact, on the doorstep of tapering bond purchases. Now let's take a look at the 2-year, 10-year Treasury yield curve and how it reacted during quantitative easing and when quantitative easing ended. Short-term yields were relatively constant during QE while long-term yields rose. This would make sense due to the fact that short-term interest rates tended to be held down. In all three quantitative easing examples, the yield curve quickly flattened after quantitative easing end. This would make sense due to the fact that with QE ending, this meant tighter monetary policy from the Fed, which could lead to slower growth, which a flattening of the yield curve would indicate. Let's now break it down further to take a look at what happened during the taper tantrum of 2013. Although Ben Bernanke floated this idea in May of 2013 of tapering asset purchases, the Fed didn't start tapering until December 2013. 10-year yields did rise dramatically following Bernanke's comments, but they peaked shortly after the first cut in purchases. By the time Fed announced that they were finished with the purchases, 10-year yields were almost back to where they started from, 2.32% versus 1.93% the day before Bernanke spoke. As for the stock market, the S&P 500 initially dipped as one might expect in anticipation of higher interest rates, but the dip proved temporary and the market continued to push ever higher. So what have we learned about the potential upcoming tapering of asset purchases? The Fed is already starting to give notice that tapering of asset purchases is coming. Fed Chairman Powell stated that he would give plenty of notice. The members of the Fed starting to comment on tapering recently shows that the Fed is talking about it. The Fed statement stated from their April meeting that the Federal Reserve will continue to increase its holding of Treasury securities by at least $80 billion per month and agency mortgage-backed securities by at least $40 billion per month until substantial further progress has been made toward the committee's maximum employment and price stability goals. The Fed has been clear that it needs tangible evidence of improvement, not just forecast. The Fed is no longer relying on forecasts to guide its policy decisions. Actual numbers and data have to be there for the Fed to shift its stance. This is by definition reactionary policy, making it not proactive. The stance is different from the taper tantrum, where the markets were not given plenty of notice before tapering would begin. This reactionary policy could be bad if inflation concerns become more consistent than temporary, and the Fed has to speed up the tapering of asset purchases and/or raise the Fed funds rate sooner than what the market is expecting. This could cause a potential pullback in risk assets. Communication by the Fed is going to be critical in this process. Monetary policy tightening has already started with other central banks such as the Bank of Canada and Bank of England, with the major central banks including the Fed, Bank of Japan, and the European Central Bank still to follow. Reasons why tapering and tightening of monetary policy is starting to take place is due to the fact the economies are recovering and central banks no longer need to support markets, and in fact is adding to financial instability's potential bubbles by continuing to provide unneeded liquidity, as discussed the most recent Fed Financial Stability Report and in the ECB Financial Stability Review. According to the latest Reuters poll of economists, the U.S. Federal Reserve could begin scaling back asset purchases in the first quarter of 2022. This means that if the Fed is going to give plenty of notice for tapering of asset purchases, that announcement could come at the upcoming Fed meetings or possibly at the Jackson Hole Policy Symposium in August, where other monetary policy changes have been announced, including the Fed's changing their inflation target to an average of 2% last year. Taking a look back at past QE periods, interest rates tend to move higher during QE and fall in the periods once they had ended. Yields tend to fall toward the end of QE. The reason for peaking before QE ends is growing investors' belief at those times that the Fed was getting closer to tapering or halting purchases. The idea that interest rates move higher during QE and lower after QE has ended is not what most investors would believe. They would think if the Fed is purchasing bonds during QE, that would push yields lower. However, the Fed purchasing bonds during QE helps to keep interest rates from moving higher. The QE makes financial conditions easier, which helps the economy to grow, which makes investors believe that the Fed has their backs and they move to risky assets from safe havens like bonds. When QE ends, interest rates can start to move higher, which means financial conditions begin to tighten, that economic growth starts to slow, and investors move from risk assets to safe havens. The stock market has taught equity investors to buy when the Fed is buying and liquidity is being put into the system, and to be careful when they are not. Bonds are different. The history of how bonds react to QE and the end of QE shows that bond investors should sell when the Fed is buying and buy when they are selling. As confidence in the Fed reducing its pace of QE heightens, bond allocations and duration of bonds should increase. When looking at the 2-year, 10-year Treasury yield curve, in all three QE examples, the yield curve quickly flattened after QE ended. Longer-term rates tended to fall after QE as financial conditions tighten and investors move from risk assets to safe haven. This is indicative of slowing economic growth. If we look at the S&P 500 during the taper tantrum period, it initially dipped after the mention of tapering by Ben Bernanke in May of 2013, as one might expect, with the anticipation of higher interest rates. But from there, the market continued to move higher. There is a thought out there that the Fed tapering could actually be a positive for the market. The first reason that we already spoke about is that yields have actually gone down after QE has stopped, which could eventually lead to more value in the equity markets. Another reason is the fact that the longer the Fed does nothing, the more likely the chance of the Fed potentially losing control of inflation if it were to be more consistent than what the Fed believes currently, which could lead them to having to raise rates more quickly or continuing to inflate potential bubbles in certain areas of risk assets that could pop. These are the risks of the Fed currently being reactive to the data instead of being proactive to their forecasts as they have been in the past. So the idea of the Fed slowly tapering asset purchases could potentially lead to the markets going up at a steady pace. Due to uncertainty around the timing and implementation of a program to taper asset purchases, volatility in the market could continue to increase from current level. Finally, the biggest question is, will the Fed or other central banks ever be able to completely exit QE? Major central banks, once having embarked on QE, have not been able to sustainably taper or widen their expanded balance sheets, so tapering remains a mostly theoretical option. This is because financial markets have become dependent on sustained monetary stimulus under QE, so at the first hint of issues in the financial markets, central banks promptly reaccelerate asset purchases to support the markets. In the U.S., a large portion of wealth is tied up in financial assets, and if they are declining, could lead to lower consumer confidence, which could lead to less consumption by individuals, leading to slower economic growth. This is why we have seen financial asset inflation due to QE, but not other types of inflation. This completes this episode of the Educating Investors Podcast. I know that time is an important asset for everybody, so I appreciate you taking part of your day to listen. If you enjoyed the content of this podcast, feel free to share this with other friends and family that may be interested. Also, feel free to check out my website at www.harmonywealthmanagement.com to learn more about what I do, as well as to find my contact information and links to my LinkedIn page and blog. The Educating Investors Podcast is presented for informational purposes only. The information presented on the Educating Investors Podcast should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The Educating Investors Podcast host Scott Peterson and his firm Harmony Wealth Management LLC should not be held liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on the Educating Investors Podcast show.